Oh, listen to that. It's the calls of whooping cranes from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. We're checking in on efforts to protect whooping cranes and their habitat and breeding grounds in Wisconsin. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Whooping cranes were on the verge of extinction back in the 40s, and today there are more than 80 in the International Crane Foundation's headcount of the eastern migratory flock that was raised in captivity and then released. Have you worked with whooping cranes in our state? What do you think needs to be done to help establish a stable population? What is it like to see them in the wild? We're at 800-642-1234. Ann Lacey is the Crane Research Coordinator for the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. Ann, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about whooping cranes.
Oh, yes. How has the pandemic affected your efforts to build the population up and to protect them?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I have to be optimistic, and we have managed to be okay with one really, really big impact that the pandemic has had on our efforts, and that is that we will not be releasing any captive-reared whooping cranes into Wisconsin this year. And it was not an easy decision, but it actually goes back to March when the International Crane Foundation actually started having all of its staff work at home before the order came down for the state to try to shut down and try to stay safer at home. And so that affected our crane care staff first and foremost. This kind of all comes back to the fact that we have very live, endangered species on our site up here in Baraboo at our headquarters. And that is our priority, keeping them safe. And the people that keep them safe are people. So we kind of stepped back from that. And so we decided we have no idea what's going to happen in the summer and the fall. You know, this was back in March, and none of us knew really what to expect from any of this. And so we had to plan way, way, way ahead. And it was decided to not rear chicks because we decided to keep our staff safe from any potential virus exposure. They split up into two teams that would not overlap. And they even disinfected all equipment between shifts.
Take us into the field, if you could, Ann. How exactly would captive rearing be unsafe for staff?
That happens on our site.
Okay.
So our captive crane staff works very closely. None of our birds are naturally fertile. So that requires artificial insemination. That requires close contact. It requires a lot of staff, and we require interns to help out with our rearing throughout the year. So that's why we had to think way ahead, and so we decided not to bring interns onto our site. And splitting up the staff reduced the staffing on any given day. And so basically what that all boils down to is we really couldn't justify raising birds in captivity for release, which was really tough. And it actually was made in decision with other captive centers. So other places in North America that are have captive whooping cranes are not raising birds for release either. So we have 1 year where we won't release birds for into the population, but we are monitoring them in the field for natural reproduction.
From a research standpoint, that might be an interesting experiment for you that happened naturally.
Yeah. So, and again, you know, the birds don't know that there's a pandemic going on, and they did great. They had, you know, I think that it's great to kind of observe what's happening in the natural world without quite so much disturbance from people happening. They went about their business naturally, and we had 18 chicks that we documented hatching in the wild this year. We know of four that are still alive, and so we're monitoring them as closely as we can, given our restrictions. And so we're really hopeful, and the fact that we're not able to release captive birds is a little blip in the grand scheme of things.
Why is it so difficult to get those chicks to adulthood?
That's a big question that we have. You know, I think that's what it boils down to. What it will take to downlist whooping cranes from endangered to threatened on a continent scale, on a species scale, is more than the natural population that goes down to Texas in the winter and breeds in Canada. And so we need to establish other self-sustaining populations. To do that, we need them to create more of themselves rather than having humans supplement their population. And so that is the biggest stumbling block right now. They are living into adulthood, birds that we place on the landscape. They're pairing, they're laying fertile eggs. And now much of our research concentrates on what is it that is preventing those chicks from fledging, so learning to fly and following their parents on migration. And there is a multitude of things that are against them. And one of them is numbers. They're still fairly rare here in Wisconsin. And with only 4 fledging a year, that's great if we get that many even this year. But that might not compensate for natural death that happens in the population. So we need more of them, and so that's what we're researching.
We're talking about the pandemic's toll on whooping cranes. Our guide is Anne Lacey. She's crane research coordinator for the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. You can join in with your questions. What do you want to know about whooping cranes and all cranes? Do you look out for the return of whooping cranes as part of their migration pattern? What did you notice this year? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And give us a sense of how the numbers, because, you know, there's the world whooping crane population, and then you also have migratory flocks and different populations there. Can you break that down for us?
Right. So in the world, there's not even 800 in the world. A lot of those are in captivity, and that is really our savings account. So our genetic savings account for that species is in captivity, and that really aids in our reintroductions. That population was based on the natural migratory population. Again, I mentioned that goes to the central part of the country, and that is over 500, and that is alone is reason for joy.
And is that the one that kind of connects Louisiana to Wisconsin?
It is not. No,
okay, that's a different one.
That is the population. Yeah, that the natural population, the remnant population, it goes by many names. They breed in Wood Buffalo National Park up in Canada, and they fly down to the Texas coast. And also, as part of the downlisting that I spoke of, there's a population here in Wisconsin, of course, that migrates to the south. East-ish, generally. But there's also a non-migratory population that the International Crane Foundation also raises chicks for to contribute to the non-migratory population in Louisiana. And so both of those populations are not yet self-sustaining. And so that is something that we're striving for. That will help the downlisting goal. So right now, those 2 active reintroductions, the natural population, and there's still some non-migratory whooping cranes in Central Florida from a previous reintroduction attempt.
When do the flocks become stable? When do they reach a point where they are self-sustaining?
Yeah, we have numbers that we are trying to reach, and they're somewhat arbitrary. 1,000 birds in the natural population and a certain number of breeding pairs. We have that same accounting for our Wisconsin flock. We want to have at least 100 birds, more would be good, and 25 breeding pair. So we have achieved that milestone. But if those 25 pairs don't produce enough chicks to, again, they have to produce more in a year than naturally die every year. And so that's really the kicker. And that is not a hard and fast number. It's one of those, you know it when you see it kind of numbers. And we're just not quite there yet.
Do you have a handle exactly on all of the chicks? Do you have very good accounting mechanisms?
Well, we do what we can. And this year was very, very difficult. We rely on aerial surveillance, and that is the best way to see them. Luckily, they're big white birds, because seeing them from on the ground is difficult in our lush Wisconsin wetlands. Folks that have visited some of the places in Wisconsin where they are can attest to this. Sometimes all of a sudden, bring, they appear, but you have to be up in the air to see them very well. So this year, when we were not allowed to go out and do field work early in April, which is the nesting season, and our pilots were grounded, we just had to wait and see. But the minute we had a plan to go out in the field safely, we did, and we started counting them up. But it was really the air support that is huge to allow us to be able to count chicks. And so we think that we've got them all.
They are just beautiful birds. Can you describe them to us?
Oh, any animal that can look you in the eye kind of engenders respect, right? And whooping cranes are actually a little bit taller than the average human. Sandhills can look me in the eye at about 5'5". Whooping cranes are a little bit bigger. They're bigger bodied. They're bright, bright white. And you only see their black primary feathers when they're flying. And they get up into the air and they fly around with those black wingtips and bright white plumage. And they're gorgeous with the red head as an accent.
We are checking in on whooping crane conservation efforts with Anne Lacey. She coordinates crane research for the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. Do you look out for the return of the whooping and sandhill cranes as part of their spring migration? What did you see this year? What did you notice? What questions do you have about cranes and efforts to breed them in captivity? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment with Anne Lacey right here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the whoopers, as they're sometimes called, here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Whooping cranes were at the brink of extinction in the 40s. Now conservation biologists say there are more than 500 birds. The endangered whooping crane is in recovery. We're checking in on how the pandemic could affect the future stability of the flocks. What do you love about cranes? Where do you go to watch them? What do you want to know about their migration patterns and how they care for their chicks? It's 800-642-1234. Anne Lacey coordinates crane research at the International Crane Foundation, and she stays with us. Let's take a call now. Karen is with us from Black Creek this morning. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What is your question about the whooping cranes?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have a whooping crane sighting near our home. It was about, a year or two ago. My husband and I were coming home from work, and we live way out in the country, and so we were by this big cornfield, and we saw these two big white blobs in the middle of the cornfield, and we were like, what are those? And as we sat and watched them, my husband kept saying, I think those are whooping cranes. And I said, those can't be whooping cranes. They're endangered. There's not that many of them. And so we watched for a while, and we took some pictures, and they flew away. And, oh, my God, when they flew away, they were huge. And we sent the pictures to my niece, who's a huge birder. And she said, where are you? Those are whooping cranes. That's like a lifetime bird sighting. And so she told us to report them on the International Crane Foundation site, which we did. But it was really just a stunning sight. It was incredible. And then I just also wanted to comment. I live in the same area where I grew up as a child, and the sandhill cranes have come back innumerably, and they're so pretty to watch. They're so delicate, and their calls are just amazing. So really, that's just what I wanted to share.
Oh, Karen, thank you for sharing such a spectacular event. And what can you add about Karen's sighting?
Oh, that is great. That was a perfect description of what so many people experience when they see whooping cranes, and it is true. But Karen, thank you so much for also mentioning the sandhill crane, Wisconsin's other crane. So yeah, the sandhill crane is definitely a conservation success story and their comeback. And that is what we hope for the whooping crane. But yeah, never assume if you see whooping cranes out in the wilds of Wisconsin that we know that they're there. And I really encourage folks, if they do see them, to report the sighting like Karen did. You can search for report a whooping crane, and that our site should come up, but it's on our website at savingcranes.org, and you'll see how to report a whooping crane. Also sandhills. Lots of people do research on sandhills, and you might see colored bands on their legs, and you can report those at the same place.
Do those sightings, that documentation, does that help you in your research?
Absolutely, it does. Yep. That is how we know birds. They, like I say, they have all of Wisconsin and Minnesota and Illinois and Michigan to expand into, and it's their choice. Once we release them or they're raised in the wild, they can choose wherever they'd like to go. And it's a lot of space, and we are few, those of us that are keeping track of them. So, yeah, it absolutely, sometimes they pop up in the most amazing places. Sometimes they might pop up with a chick. Oh, we had no idea you were nesting there. So we really rely on the sightings of folks, especially in the wintering grounds and on migration, too.
What is, actually, let's bring in Nancy now in Middleton. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, thank you for your show. We were, about a year or a little more ago, we were driving County V, I think it is, to the forest, and we happened to see a grouping of sandhill cranes with three whooping cranes, and I believe that some of them are being released with sandhills. We had enough time to go back and get a camera and a tripod and photograph them, got their band numbers, and I first called the federal DNR or whatever, and they told me to call the Sandhill Crane Foundation, which I am a member of, by the way, and we did, and you were able to tell me exactly by the tag numbers what crane they were, where they were born, everything. It was so cool for the whooping cranes.
How fascinating.
It was really neat. We have some beautiful pictures of them, and people were stopping by the road because they saw us, and one guy said, is that an albino sandhill crane?
Oh, dear.
No. And I was telling everybody to be really quiet. And I was almost, I was just shaking with excitement. It was so wonderful. And it was great. And I also recommend, there's so many great places to see those sandhill crane migrations. We've been to Kearney, but also Crex Meadows in Wisconsin, of course, the Aldo Leopold Center, too. But it was really neat to see those great big white cranes in with the sandhills as well. So.
Nancy, thank you for sharing that experience. And what is the relationship like between sandhills and whooping cranes?
Well, for the most part, they do share similar habitats. They are both wetland nesters, so they require the beautiful Wisconsin wetlands for nesting. And we have been so blessed with being able to have about 50% of our historic wetlands here in Wisconsin. So there's plenty of nesting area. But they both have adapted to our agricultural landscape. You know, they really like those open areas for foraging, and that's probably where Nancy saw that sighting. And she mentioned that often we will release, if we cannot find an adult whooping crane to release a young captive-reared whooping crane with, that doesn't always work out. We know that we can release the whooping cranes into the company of those beautiful flocks of sandhills, and that they'll be able to learn the migration route from their sandhill cousins. And often happen that they're not albino necessarily, but every now and again, there's a very white or light-colored sandhill out there. But make no mistake, if you see a whooping crane, you'll know it.
Well, they may just have a foster family that they're working with.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
What is parenthood like for whooping cranes?
They are extraordinary parents. So cranes are infamous for pairing for life, more or less. And so the male and the female crane, they set up their pairing at about 3 years old. They start nesting, and it might take them a while to figure out how to raise chicks successfully. But they both take care of incubation duties. They have to sit on eggs for 30 days before they hatch. Whooping cranes take about 100 days before they are fully capable of flight, and so that's a long time to take care of a young, vulnerable bird, and they have to provide it with food and teach it how to find food in these beautiful Wisconsin wetlands that we have, that have abundant resources. And so it's really, really intense. And so right now, a lot of our young birds are just learning to fly, and so they have to take them to an open area and kind of encourage them to get up in the air and realize what it's like to have air under the wings. And then the big event comes in about November, when the parents will lead it on a great journey to wherever they may winter. And so imagine getting in the car and taking a road trip with mom and dad to someplace you might never have been. And that's what the fall will entail for the birds before they are released on their own and the parents come back to nest and they are on their own in the wild.
And what can we do for these birds in the wild, these endangered birds? How can we help them with their nesting spaces, with trying to grow and prosper?
Well, in the wild, I think Nancy hit it. Respect birds that you see out in the wild. Stay in your car. Don't approach them. You might find that they don't mind if you approach them, but that is not a good idea for sandhills or whooping cranes. So give them space and don't disturb them. To support the Crane Foundation's efforts, thank you, Nancy, for being a member. That's fantastic. Membership is great. We have many programs at the International Crane Foundation for endangered cranes and saving the places where they live, supporting people in crane places so that they don't disturb the cranes, and this is happening worldwide. So we have lots of information about our programs and special events coming up next week. We have Whoop It Up, very appropriate for our talk today. Whoop It Up is our big event for this year, and that's next Thursday, and you can find out much more about that at savingcranes.org.
Well, Anne, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Anne Lacey is the Crane Research Coordinator for the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. And for disclosure, it is a business sponsor of WPR. Just ahead, we have Dan Sachs from the Noodle Loaf Podcast for another Explorers Club Hour. Dan is a music teacher. We'll share his ideas for creative fun. Stay with us. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.